This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, May 22nd, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support for KUAF comes from Greenhouse Grill, featuring a seasonal menu of organic, locally grown produce and all-natural meats, plus organic beer and wines. Brunch and live music each Sunday until 2 p.m. Located at 481 South School in Fayetteville's Mill District, and on the web at greenhousegrill.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas talks to Bill Halter, who's running for Arkansas governor in 2014. Plus, Gordon Family Tree, a movie filmed in the region, premieres tonight in Northwest Arkansas, and more.
First, Arkansas State Treasurer has officially resigned after federal prosecutors accused her of taking cash payments from a broker who handled a large amount of the state's investment portfolio. Democrat Martha Schaffner resigned effective yesterday from the office she's held since 2007 and was reelected to in 2010. She was barred by term limits from seeking reelection next year. Democrats and Republicans alike called for Schaffner to step down after the FBI arrested her in a sting operation. Democratic House Minority Leader Greg Letting, among many, calling for immediate resignation.
Certainly, given the new information that came about in the last couple of days, I believe it is in the best interest of that office and the state of Arkansas for her to resign as soon as possible. And if she doesn't, we would certainly support calling a special session to address the matter.
Schaffner is accused of taking at least $36,000 in cash. At least two of the payments from the broker were allegedly delivered to Schaffner in a pie box. Democratic Governor Mike Beebe was also among those who called for Schaffner to resign. The governor can appoint someone to serve the rest of her term.
The severe weather that brought heavy winds, several inches of rain, and widespread lightning to the area earlier this week serves as a reminder that spring is the time of year when severe weather is more likely. Robert McGowan, the director of Benton County Emergency Services, says a little preparation can help make sure that you aren't caught off guard if severe weather strikes.
Biggest thing is be aware of the surrounding and be aware of the weather conditions that you're facing. Want people to either sign up for BC Alert or monitor your TV and your radio stations, a weather radio, so when any event is going to affect our area, they'll be notified and know what they're going to be facing in the area, what to do, to have a plan to protect themselves and their family.
BC Alert is Benton County's emergency alert system that can send alerts to an email account, smartphones and other cell phones, and to landlines. In addition, most cities in Washington County and the county itself provide the Code Red or similar emergency notification services. Authorities are also reminding residents of the statewide initiative known as Smart 911 that is free of charge to everyone. At the website smart911.com, Arkansans can create a profile with information for first responders, information like medical conditions for anyone in your home, if you have pets or children, or if there are any special instructions for entering your residence. Latricia Woodruff, spokesperson for the Conway Police Department, notes even if Smart 911 hasn't made it to your area, you can still sign up.
It's going to be in every police agency, dispatch center. Now, some agencies are maybe a little slower to get theirs, but say, for example, if you lived outside of Conway and that area is not on the Smart 911 system yet, it would still behoove you to go in and sign up, because if you come and get groceries here in Conway, or you on the interstate, or you go to Pulaski County, you're still in that system.
Several counties and cities are already using the Smart 911 service, as Arkansas was the first state to adopt the technology.
Speaking of storms, City of Bentonville yesterday issued a release stating a citywide cleanup of debris from Monday's windstorm will be held starting at 7 a.m. Tuesday, June 4th. The 2 weeks buffer time is meant to allow residents enough time to collect and place debris curbside for pickup. The city will pick up all vegetative debris, such as limbs, sticks, and leaves. City does ask that no tree limb exceeds 6 feet in length or 14 inches in diameter.
Walmart is making efforts to draw the public's attention to products made in Arkansas. Local companies and lawmakers joined in the launching Monday to highlight thousands of Arkansas-made items on the shelves. The program, called Arkansas's Own, will help customers easily find and buy things made from the state. Governor Mike Beebe.
Let's manufacture in Arkansas. Let's make the products in Arkansas, and let's sell those products. So for all the reasons that have been stated, for the creation of jobs, for the spurring of the economy, for Arkansas pride, we know we can make stuff as well or better than anybody in the whole world.
Michelle Gluckler is with Walmart.
As part of our U.S. manufacturing effort and as part of Arkansas's own, Walmart has made renewed commitments to Hannah's Candles. Our goal with Hannah's Candles is lofty, and I'm going to give you those numbers. We're going to go from roughly $4 million last year to $30 million in Hannah's Candles in 2013. Hannah's Candles is just one of many examples.
The company is investing $50 billion over 10 years on American-made products.
Within the next 2 weeks, law enforcement officials can try out electronic traffic tickets. Officials hope this will take effect by the end of this year. Bill Sadler, spokesman for the Arkansas State Police, says e-tickets can enhance the safety of law enforcement and cut down the time needed to issue a ticket.
Well, the most beneficial element of the program is to allow for instantaneous downloading of this citation to a central server where local courts can access these tickets rather than wait for the tickets to be delivered by law enforcement in a paper form. Sometimes that could take a day or two. Sometimes it could take up to a week before the clerks could have access to the tickets.
Sadler says the program can also allow violators to pay fines online.
The Great Arkansas Treasure Hunt, an effort to find the owners of unclaimed property, is going through some changes this year that allow for online searches and claims. Deputy Auditor of State Janet Harris says replacing the old paper system will improve claimant satisfaction and speed of service.
The search is very easy, very simple, and the e-filing process is also pretty simple as well. And we just encourage everyone to go out there and look. It's our job to make sure we put this money back in the hands of the original owner, and that's what we'd like to do.
Harris says there is nearly $30 million of unclaimed property owned by up to one in five Arkansans. The expedited claims process has moved the claims period from the fall to the spring. There is about 1 month left to visit auditor.ar.gov to search for your name and any unclaimed property.
Mostly clear tonight. Lows will be in the mid-50s in northwest Arkansas, around 60 for the Arkansas River Valley. Mostly sunny tomorrow. Highs from 75 to 80. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy. Lows from 55 to 60.
Bill Halter was elected Lieutenant Governor of Arkansas in 2006 before challenging for the U.S. Senate in 2010, losing his Democratic primary battle to incumbent Blanche Lincoln. This year, Halter is vying for the governor's seat and faces former 4th District Congressman Mike Ross in the Democratic primary. Halter's Arkansas Promise Scholarship Plan has been front and center so far in his campaign. Recently, he was a guest on a new Sunday morning politics show called Capital View, which our content partner Roby Brock hosts with David Goins on KARK Channel 4 in the Central Arkansas market. Here is an excerpt from that conversation.
Let's begin first. There's been a little flap this week with the phrase, the Arkansas Promise. Mm-hmm. Your scholarship program, Arkansas State University, claims they've got some sort of rights on that. Kind of walk us through that flap. Where does it stand today?
Well, the fact is we're in discussions with them, but it's that's not the important thing. The important thing is the substance of the proposal, which is to provide financial assistance to students that achieve a 2.5 grade point average in high school in Arkansas and go on to an Arkansas college. And by putting together the lottery scholarship, Pell Grants, other federal assistance, and other scholarship assistance, we'll be able to provide full tuition to those students. We're working out the issues surrounding the name.
You're confident it'll get worked out.
I am confident that'll get worked out. And the fact is, what's far more important is the proposal. And what is important about that is moving Arkansas from where we are today, which is 49th out of 50 states in the percentage of our adult population with a college degree. We have to do better than that to compete in the 21st century for the types of jobs that we want. But in addition, it has become more and more expensive for families to go to college. At the same time, a college education has become that much more important in order for us as a state to compete. This proposal is addressed squarely at that. And people are beginning to see that. We've had commentary just this week from two of the deans of the print media, right, who have said that this is a proposal that needs to be the focus of the gubernatorial campaign because higher education is so important to our future.
How does this work without, as some people have said, either cutting services, raising taxes? I mean, you look at the lottery scholarship for freshmen this year, it's $2,000. A semester now at U of A or UCA, 7,700. I mean, that's a big gap to make.
Well, as you know, though, David, I mean, the way they've structured the scholarship proposal is 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, and 5,000. Right. So we shouldn't be moving off of that $2,000 figure. But the other thing is the reason that the scholarship levels have been cut back is because the program has been far more successful in terms of the number of students that are accessing the scholarship than the legislature predicted. So We know that this works. We know that students respond to the financial assistance. We've seen that down in El Dorado, Arkansas as a classic example. We've seen it in Arkadelphia where they have promise programs like this. It will work for the state of Arkansas. There is no better investment than we can make. We know that the lifetime earnings of a college graduate are on average $1 million more than the lifetime earnings of someone with a high school diploma. This is the kind of proposal where we invest in the future today, and it pays off not only in the income levels of these students in the future, but also it pays off for the state in terms of a better community, better customers, people that have more incomes that they can spend in other businesses in the community. You can look across the country. Income levels in a state are tightly tied to the percentage of the adult population with a college degree. And given that we're 49th out of 50, ahead of only West Virginia.
How do we fix retention levels? I mean, kids aren't keeping the scholarships. It's money that's...
But look, it is not all of the students that are losing the scholarship, right?
No, I mean, clearly.
Clearly. So we have seen increased enrollment, and we have seen greater numbers of graduates. Look at the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville, where in the first year of the lottery scholarship, freshman enrollment of Arkansas students went up by 33%. At the end of the second year, it was up by 50% over previous levels.
I want to pull a quote from an op-ed that you referenced from Roy Ockert, former Jonesboro Sun editor. He writes a statewide column now. Quote, instead of cutting taxes, the legislature could have channeled $140 million or so into college scholarships. If Halter's numbers are right, that might have been almost enough to fund the Arkansas Promise. Could have also stopped what we're seeing in some other cuts to higher education that are going on in scholarships right now. As governor, would you have fought against those tax cuts to protect that money for higher education?
Well, let me say a couple things about that, Robbie. First, in the proposal that we put out, right, we indicated that there would be necessarily an increase in general revenues devoted to this in order to fund it.
Growth revenue.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We said $50 to $75 million. Now, I'm also made very clear that we are not proposing to raise taxes in order to fund this program, nor do we think it's necessary. As you know well, having followed this, both of you guys have followed this for a while, every year the general revenue budget grows because of economic growth and so forth, and it is significantly more than that $50 million that I referenced. So to answer your question in the first instance, I would say it is not necessary to raise taxes. Now to your second question about the specifics of these particular proposals and so forth. Look. We're talking about a big budget. We're talking about a $5 billion general revenue budget. We're talking about a number of other billions of dollars that are coming in from other revenue streams. So I don't want to get into every little detail of what the legislature just did. The fact is, in 2 years, we'll be fashioning another budget. It will be reflective of the circumstances there. Just as Governor Beebe said he wanted to reduce the sales tax on groceries, said that he would do it within budget constraints, and then went about the business of doing that, that's what I'm saying, that we will do this without raising taxes. It is very much a priority for me because I believe that these expenditures for students to get those college educations is one of the best investments that we can make.
So theoretically, would this be a tiered approach? I mean, maybe not everything the first year, and then you build up to a full ride?
You could absolutely phase this in over several years. That's one approach you could take.
We've got less than 30 seconds here. You have run for governor before, backed down into the lieutenant governor's race. There's been chatter that you might have your names floated for perhaps 2nd District Congress, perhaps another race. Are you in the governor's race for good?
I am in the governor's race, and I will tell you that I consider it flattering that my opponent and his team is out there pushing me as being talented enough for the Congress. but no, I'm running for governor. I sought the endorsement of folks for governor. I have the endorsement of folks for governor. We're raising money to run for governor.
Democratic gubernatorial candidate Bill Halter talked with Roby Brock and David Goines on the new political program Capital View, which airs in the Central Arkansas market on KARK. Support for Talk Business Arkansas Knows Arcs at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability, from the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. Next month, Bentonville sets aside the entire 30 days of June for its Arts and Culinary Festival. There will be the annual art walk, special events inside galleries and at restaurants, and throughout the month there will also be music. Andy Green, the productions manager with Downtown Bentonville Incorporated, says organizers saw the month as a chance to put a spotlight on jazz.
Not that all of it will be just that, but there's very few opportunities for us to present some of the tremendous regional talent there is in both live settings, outdoors, indoors, some intimate, some not so intimate.
Robert Ginsburg, the founder and president of the North Arkansas Jazz Society and the host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz program each Friday and Saturday night, has helped create the month's programs, including a series of intimate jazz performances called Notes at Night. Notes at Night will be held each Thursday night in June at a downtown restaurant.
And the press room is the perfect venue for that. It's very small, very intimate. In fact, there were several nights it was hard to even get in the door. And so we're putting small ensembles in there. And the room has its challenges, but it's not unlike a lot of the rooms that I've been to in New York City, where it's like a lot of the physical elements are all wrong, but the room works. The Village Vanguard being a perfect example. It's kind of an L-shaped room. And there's not much more space than what a trio could occupy in there.
As is the case with most of the musical events in Bentonville in June, the Notes at Night concerts are free. Recently, Andy Green and Robert Ginsburg came to our studio to talk about the musicians they've lined up for the Arts and Culinary Festival and not talk about some surprises they're still working on. I asked Robert first about the Notes at Night lineup.
Every Thursday in June, there'll be a jazz or jazz-related performance, and we've got some great acts in there, starting with a group that's out of St. Louis called Silver Freak. And these are guys, a couple of these guys I actually grew up with. St. Louis is my hometown. But
we let them in anyway.
Yeah. They let them in anyway, right. And they're all guys about my age that have been making music for collectively probably 150 years. And it's a really eclectic mix of what they do, because the leader of this group is a guy named Al Oxenhandler, and he plays drums, he sings, he dances, although he's not going to dance in this context. But when we were growing up, we primarily listened to soul music, Motown and that kind of stuff, and Alan was listening to that, but he was one of these guys that was listening to Prez Prado and George Shearing and Frank Sinatra, and he started singing along with them. So there's three guys in this group. It's a trio, a great piano player named Kurt Landis, who's also a singer, a fantastic guitar player who is also a singer, and Al Ox. So there's great three-part harmonies. So it should be a really interesting show. But this performance is going to be a club-oriented, more straight-ahead jazz thing. They're also going to appear for one of the first Fridays.
Yeah, they'll appear the next night on the stage outside on the square. So we'll give them a chance to use the repertoire that maybe isn't so conducive to an intimate nightclub jazz experience and experiment with some of the music that he talked about, the range of material that they cover.
That's the 7th.
The 7th.
Yeah. And Hogtown Hot Club is going to open for him. So that'll be quite an interesting
And I think we probably still have one surprise left to go on that roster. I've got something we need to something I'm cooking with and trying to figure out if we can add it up and make it work. And then on the 8th, we'll add some additional artists to the roster on the stage by Farmer's Market. And that'll be Ben Harris Trio. You all know Ben. He plays here in the Fayetteville Jazz Collective. And I think Adams Collins is going to play with him as well on that trio. And then Roby Pantol with the bass player. He has yet to be named. And Stephen and Bonnie Turner will play Saturday the 8th. This will be Saturday during the day, start midday about 10 o'clock and go through till about 2. And then the Notes at Night series continues on the following Thursday.
We're going to bring R.J. Michaud back. He was there last year. And, of course, that's more in the realm of the blues, but inseparable from jazz, really. And I missed that show last year, but I heard he rocked the house.
He rocked the house.
He always does. He always does.
Great show.
So RJ will be there for the press room Notes at Night, the Thursday the 13th, and then Adams Collins Trio. And Adams is a Fayetteville native who went to the university, got a degree. He even taught at the university for a while, and he has a great trio that he performs with. So they'll be at Notes at Night at the press room on the 20th. And then, Andy, you've got the Road to Essence on the Square coming.
That's a surprise. That's another surprise.
Andy's got all these surprises. It's stay tuned.
You can't just tell everybody everything. It's no fun to reveal all right away. There's a possibility that we'll have a very interesting surprise coming in mid-June. You mentioned the Road to Essence. It's part of that festival, but I can't reveal who the artists are yet. But we'll let you know as soon as we can confirm that for you. Mm-hmm.
And then the final Notes at Night on the 27th will be one of Northwest Arkansas's favorite, Claudia Burson and her trio. The thing about Claudia and her, and anyone that has seen her would agree, is she has risen above technique. Mm-hmm. She has technique and she knows music. But the place that her music comes from is just soulful and heartfelt, and and it's always, she always swings. So her trio, which can be heard regularly at Copeland's up in Rogers, they do a Sunday gig, and now they're doing a Friday gig here in Fayetteville at the Chancellor. So she'll close it out at the press room, and that'll be fun on June 27th. And then we get to the end of June, the 30th.
Yeah, we have a closing party, and it's another one of those. I can't tell you who it is because I don't know who's going to play it.
It's even a surprise to Andy.
That one will be a surprise to all of us.
Well, this one,
I don't know who we're going to.
Actually, I know who this one, but I can't tell right now.
Oh, you can't. I might mention two other. There's a couple of other things that are going to happen at some of our program partners' venues. Cali Soul will be playing at Crystal Bridges on the evening of June 7th. After you visit First Friday, And then John Two Hawks, who is a Grammy and Emmy-nominated musician, world musician, will be playing at Norberta Philbrook's Gallery on June 8th at 2 to 4, 6 to 8, it looks like. So there's another couple of music gems that you might want to take in as you, if you're up there in Bentonville.
Andy Green is the productions manager with Downtown Bentonville Incorporated. We also heard from Robert Ginsburg. You can learn much more about the musical events scheduled throughout Bentonville for the June Arts and Culinary Festival by going to the website downtownbentonville.org. It is Wednesday, May 22nd, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor, Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Two kinds of art for tomorrow. Views on American Encounters, an art talk led by curator of American art, Kevin Murphy. He will discuss social status and the birth of leisure during the 19th century as represented in the exhibit American Encounters, Genre Painting and Everyday Life.
That's the exhibit that has just arrived at Crystal Bridges.
That happens at 1 o'clock tomorrow at Crystal Bridges, and it's free. Or if you prefer the more homespun kind of art, the annual Airing of the Quilts. Hosted by Quilters United and Learning Together, happens tomorrow at 6 o'clock at 3302 West Perry Road in Rogers. If you've never been to an airing of the quilts, it literally means they hang them out on the fence.
It's a springtime thing, right?
Right. As you would
air
have
them
done.
Out, right.
Exactly. But this is just so you can go look
sure,
at them.
Sure. More art than function.
Well, I'm sure they're functional, but not on the fence.
Right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Gordon Family Tree tells the story of Fremont Gordon, a man who doesn't embrace his beloved skill of carpentry because he feels he needs to be something more than just a builder. The film follows Fremont as he takes a cross-country road trip where he meets average folks that change his idea of what's important in life. Last fall, I spent an afternoon on set while the movie was being filmed here in Northwest Arkansas. Filming officially wrapped October 9th, and then the movie headed to post-production. The latest step in the filmmaking process has brought the director and co-producers back to Northwest Arkansas for a sold-out premiere tonight. Earlier this week, co-writers and executive producers Ryan and Jenica Schwartzman, along with director Mark Hampson, stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio to give an update on their filmmaking journey. During our conversation, I asked the co-writers what it's like to hand their project off to other people during the post-production process.
It is fun and exciting to have nothing to do with the most important process in your movie. It is scary, but also we had already, during filming, come to the point where, according to Mark, about 3 weeks before shooting, and according to me and Ryan, about a few days into shooting, where the writers have no say from now on and they have nothing to do with the project. Your story is no longer your story. So it was completely in their hands early enough that when they were in post, I had already started trusting fully that I didn't mind. I knew they were going to do better with everything that I could ever anyway. It was just going to be a better movie now.
Yeah, and it helped that we could trust them, that we trust that they know the story we want to tell, and they shot the story we want to tell, and they have the same idea that we do. So we could just give it to them and step aside. And we tried to step aside, although did call them once a week or every other week to try and get updates.
Which is fine.
So were you more involved in the post-production editing, Mark?
Yeah, so the whole of post-production was run by me and my professional partner, Ronnie. And so we worked initially on a quick edit, and that's where you really get to evaluate what you've done, and that's where we find out things on set that we were like, that was it, that was the take. And then in post we're going, I have no idea why we said that was the one. And you find out what works and what didn't, and then hopefully stumble on some happy surprises that you didn't quite know were there. And, you know, the movie gets written about four times, once as a script, and then when we go to shoot it, we're kind of reimagining some things. And then once we start editing, there's kind of two layers of rewriting how things happen or better supported here and there, and strengthening relationships, finding out which relationships aren't directed towards the core of the story we're trying to tell. And so we did months of that kind of over and over again. When we had ideas about how this was an ensemble type movie, or at least we did in the post end. And then as we narrowed in, we realized how focused it was on the main character's journey, and that changed how we would present certain scenes and who we would cut back to make sure that the audience is feeling his journey, not watching things happening to him, but where he's at what point, how he feels as he's going through it. And so that changes very heavily what you're going to do along the way. So we re-edited and re-edited and re-edited, and then near the end we thought we were done. And we held a small focus group with a few people who had never read the script. And just physically watching it with people was really eye-opening, because moments before days before, you're thinking, I can't possibly make this scene any shorter. And then as you watch it with someone and they don't have to say anything, and you're suddenly going, wow, I could lose half this scene. This is obviously boring. And then they were all really helpful, then we went back in and re-edited the whole movie in the last week because of their feedback, and it was very helpful. And we didn't really make changes that they asked for, but experiencing their reaction to everything, mm-hmm. really helped us understand how people were taking the information we were giving out there and what was missing and what was going. Made it a lot better movie. So for months it was we felt really good about it and really confident, but the last week of post-production or editing before we went to sound and color was where the movie really just blew up and took shape.
So when did you guys finally get to see the finished product, like, done?
How finished are we talking?
Are we still
editing right now?
Well, we saw we did a world premiere in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. at the International Family Film Festival, mm-hmm. Which was the first time an audience saw it. And at that festival, we won the top prize, the Pearl Award.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Very big deal.
So that was the first time that Jenica and myself saw it all the way through.
Okay.
But since then, it's actually been changed a little bit with some of the sound and the coloring. But
yeah, a lot of it was getting into because the editing we spent so long on it, we had a very rushed sound and color situation. And Ronnie just like knocked it out of the park, but we didn't have a lot of time for review. We were like finishing the movie to deliver mm-hmm. it to the screening. So in the theater, it was our first time in a theater setting, and that was educational, because there it was very easy to go, oh, well, that's loud or that's dark, and there were things we were prepared knowing going in, because we were kind of using it as a pseudo LA premiere along with a test technical screening for us. So there have been mixes and changes since then, and we're really happy with where it's at.
Oh, good.
So now it's technically the finished product, but the executive producers, us, we have not seen the size. So the color is different in a different size in the theater, like the scope. Everything is different about it, experience-wise.
As opposed to when you watch it on a computer screen or something.
Yes. And we're seeing it in the size it was made instead of a lower resolution of it. Like a DVD isn't very big resolution.
Right.
So on Wednesday night will be the first time Ryan and I will really experience having watched the movie that we made.
Okay.
Which is exciting, I think, to be able to see it for the first time with an audience full of people,
yeah.
I think is the best way to see it for the first time, so you can feel people's reactions to it.
So you said you were a little bit rushed for this festival. Do you not, I mean, you have to submit something to them to be allowed into the festival, right? So did you
yes.
submit them something and finish, or how does that work?
We submitted a festival rough cut, which at the beginning, Mark put a slide that says everything that's missing. No special effects, no color design, no sound design, a few other things missing. He would put in there with a submission saying, we'll be done by your air date, or more importantly, by your deadline, which is usually a week before the festival.
Mm-hmm.
And we submitted to a few festivals that way. But we knew we wanted a world premiere at the International Family Film Festival. We had been planning it for a few years, that this was the right way to show it. They really like us at that festival. It's very local. It's good. It's LA-based people can get there. But it was very nerve-wracking because we won an amazing, huge honor. But the people at the festival who gave us this honor, those people have never seen the finished film. They didn't make it to the world premiere because they're not going to sit in the festival. The jury already watched it. So they gave us this really amazing award, having never seen the ending the way the ending turned out.
Yeah, and we had prepared the film as far as we could, and I think you'd get a good sense of it. But every once in a while, we'd be in the middle of a scene, and it would cut to black, and it would say, Free looks at a cell phone here. And
right.
There's a picture of such and such. And then it would go back to the movie. So they were really great about not letting that hold up their experience in watching the film.
Did you have to reshoot those scenes?
No, they were in special effects, or okay. They were being inserted, or there were a few pickup shots that had Ryan carving a piece of wood or things like that. That happened just about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
Just small close-up pickup shots that you had to do an insert, but also you changed some of them, right?
Yeah, a few of them were, as we would get into further edits and redevelop areas, we would start to notice, well, what we shot here is great, but if we actually had him looking at this or this separate, that would really help support this other item. And again, all about focusing in on where we want everyone to be every moment.
Okay.
And we also had, as Jenica had mentioned, we changed a few items around at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. And so once we made those decisions, we had to then schedule getting a couple actors back together to shoot just like a shot or something to support something. So it became, at the end, a whole lot of production for 1, 2, 3 second moment.
Sure.
Which dramatically changed the ending.
Okay. Were you surprised that you had a changed ending?
When we shot the film, we had two options for the ending, because when we sent the script out in pre-production and had people respond to it, people responded very split on if they thought that this should happen or if they thought that this should happen. So we shot it with the possibility of either ending happening. And then we had it in our mind that as Mark started editing it and got through, we would really see how you felt watching the movie, which way you felt it should end. The movie would just have a natural feel for one or the other instead of forcing what our minds thought it should be.
And it really helped to do, like we did a test screening before the final cut of the movie. Doing the test, we sent out 15 surveys with the script to people who weren't a part of the industry, that were our target audience, that gave feedback. So we felt very confident all along that we have a lot of input. We're not making rash choices. There's a lot of information involved. And Mark had spent so much time with the footage, he kept saying the movie will pick its own ending. The characters will tell you what they want to do. And it was completely truth. Like, I feel as I watch it that the characters completely tell me, like, who they are, and I know what I want from them. And it's just so much better to be, relaxed and easy about it. Because anything that we might have fought with on screen, I mean, on set or anything, the ending was always flexible.
I feel funny talking about it this way, because it makes it sound like our movie's like this suspense thriller with a cliffhanger ending, when it's just a nice relationship story.
Sure.
And
we don't want to give it away.
No, exactly. So, but it's, you know, lives have different endings, and it was nice to see how this one worked out.
So Wednesday night, you guys are having the premiere here in Fayetteville at the Razorback Malco. That event is sold out, as I understand it?
It is completely sold out. It's sold out within 10 days of announcement.
Wow.
And we have a second screening on Thursday night at the Malco at 7 p.m. with a Q&A afterwards with the director and producers and a few other local people who were involved in the film, which we're happy to have. And that will be at 7 o'clock as well. And those are tickets that are available. Luckily, we have a few that we can tell people about while we're here.
And where can they get some more information on that for the tickets and things?
GordonFamilyTreeScreening.eventbrite.com, or just go to our Facebook page, Gordon Family Tree the Movie. All sure. The information is always there.
Excellent. Yes, you guys have seemed to have a very active Facebook page, letting people know what's happening through post-production and things like that. Why was it important to keep people updated?
Well, this has been a community project from the very, very beginning. I came to Northwest Arkansas, where my husband Ryan is from, and I did
a short party for a bunch of people who are interested in film to talk about our platform of wanting to make a film in Arkansas using only Arkansas investors so that the money goes back to Arkansas, only using Arkansas everything, bringing our crew that we felt comfortable with because it's our first movie here and really making it a community project. And then we did a huge Kickstarter party here on June 1st that so many people in the community came out for. So we've always wanted to keep everybody involved. It has a lot to do with the feeling of the movie is all about Southern hospitality and how unique and amazing and life-changing really it is to be in a community like this. And we value that, especially living in a different place and seeing how we're treated here and how life is here. So I feel like the community has always been the forefront of why we're doing what we do.
Why did you feel it was important to have a premiere here? Because you had one in L.A. You had your world premiere there.
It's a very, very sweet, loving place that we had 32 really generous sponsors give a lot of food or equipment or time or energy and love to us as filmmakers who they did not know. And they gave a lot to us. So we knew as part of our contracts that we wrote in for investors and Kickstarter and sponsors that we would do a red carpet premiere. And here was a better option to reward and honor all the sponsorship that we got and the community that was in it. There's so many actors here. It would be heartbreaking if they didn't get to watch it on a big screen and take their photos and go to an after party and feel that feeling. We live in LA. There's a lot of it there. This is a much more fun experience with everybody who is involved. It's a real party. That's all. It's very relaxed.
And the way filming and filmmaking works, we don't know when it'll be seen by a wide audience. Hopefully, it will be released in limited theatrical release. If not, it will be on DVD at the very least. But this is a way that as many people as possible can see it in a theater the way that the creative side intended for it to be seen.
So what is the plan? What's next?
Next is to go to more film festivals throughout the year. We have a packed schedule. We've submitted so far to 15 film festivals. We'll be waiting to hear about those for the rest of the year. And at the same time, we have a producer's rep at Circus Road Films that's working with us on distribution options because we want to keep our net really wide because we had the pleasure and benefit of a low budget that we can choose based on what we want and we don't have to fulfill great needs of huge budgets you have to pay back to the investors. We do have very modest budget for our type of film, and we got to decide how we wanted to distribute, if we wanted to go in a more faith family direction, or if we want to stay in a family direction, or if we just want to go very road trip movie. It's such an interesting world, the whole distribution process, so we wanted to just leave it up to time and decisions like that.
Jenica and Ryan Schwartzman are co-writers and executive producers of the film Gordon Family Tree. Mark Hampson is the film's director, and all three of them stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio earlier this week. During our conversation, they also mentioned plans to film another movie in the area later this winter. However, if you want to see the finished product of the group's first project in Northwest Arkansas, tickets are still available for a screening and a question and answer session tomorrow night at Razorback Theater in Fayetteville. The screening begins at 7 and tickets are available at gordonfamilytreescreening.eventbrite.com.
Rochelle Bradshaw, Matt Smith, and Yaniv Tobenhaus are great friends who happen to each be musicians. Rochelle writes and sings, Matt writes and plays guitar, Yaniv writes and plays piano. And that's pretty much all you need to know to understand the title of their Sunday night performance at Scarpino's in downtown Fayetteville. Great Music with Great Friends is what it's called. Though they've played together often, this will be their last chance for a while. Yaniv, a former resident of Fayetteville, is in town for just a few days before leaving for Israel and then returning to his new home in New York. Yesterday, the three came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio for a quick conversation about Sunday night's show, and they ended with an impromptu number. All three have played a wide variety of music in an even wider collection of ensembles. I asked how they formed their musical friendship. Rochelle says the answer is complicated, and it's not.
It's hard to explain, but not really. You know, it makes sense in my head. When you're doing music and it just makes you feel so good. It's so fluid. When you get together with some amazing musicians, it just flows, you know? And you just go with it.
If you got, the three of you seem to have this natural language. Like you said, you're all passionate. You have this respect for each other and for music. But can that deepen over time? I mean, you make that first connection, but does every time you play together, does it actually help you even more?
Yeah, certainly.
I believe so. Music is just, to me, it's real similar with everything else in life. Like, one day, it's amazing. The next day, you know, it maybe not didn't turn out exactly how you wanted, but that's, I mean, it's really, to me, just the same as life. But when you're playing with, when I get to play with these guys, it's always really fun, and that inspires me to search for new things and try to, you know, make the music as best as it possibly could be at that time.
And these guys are just so awesome. They make me look bad, you know, so I have to try really hard. You know, it's like, it's not scripted.
That.
Oh, it's not scripted. So, you know, every time I do, like, we do the same song, but every time I do it, I have to sing it different because it's a different time. It's a different space, a different energy, and, you know.
And I think I know what you mean in one hand, but on the other hand, you got to know where each other's going, right?
You feel it.
Yeah, you definitely feel it. And I think you can really value the progression that we do as, you know, as a group, as a collective over time. And like Matt said, it's like life. It's like, you know, when you get to know somebody and you have a mundane routine, but then after a year you can say, wow, we've been through something together and we're at a different place. And so I often find with musicians that I play a lot with, like these guys, that, you know, after a certain period of time, you realize what a journey you've been going through together and how it actually raises the level of communication in the music.
Rochelle Bradshaw vocals, Matt Smith guitar, and Yaniv Tobenhaus piano will perform Sunday night at Scarpino's in Fayetteville. Doors open at 6. Music begins at 7. Tickets are available at Nature's Water, Sound Warehouse, Good Things Boutique, and Tramps Day Spa, all locations in Fayetteville. Tickets will also be available at the door at Scarpino's Sunday night. Before they left the Furman Garner Performance Studio, Rochelle and Yaniv collaborated on an impromptu version of one of her own songs called No More.
Become convinced that you don't want happiness for me, and you don't want happiness for you. Why else would you put us through all this stress, all this pressure, all this strain? Time is running out. So if I can't get it from you, I'ma get it from somewhere else. No more, no more will I let you bring me down, trample my emotions to the ground. Every time I get out, you pull me in. Baby, there's a new life for me to begin. Thank you. not blaming everything on you. I know I've done my part, but you trivialize my hurt. No longer put me first. I told you what would happen if you kept on tripping. No more, no more, no more, no more, no more, no more will I let you bring me down, trample my emotions to the ground. Every time I get out, you pull me right back in. Baby, there's a new life for me to begin. Oh, yeah.
Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. KUAF is supported by Fayetteville Window Washing, offering both residential and commercial cleaning services, as well as power washing, gutter protection, and more. Information is available on the web at FayettevilleWindowWashing.com. KUAF is also supported by 121 Digital Marketing, a full-service digital agency helping local businesses with their online presence. Services include reputation and social media management, mobile and desktop website design and management, press releases, search engine marketing and optimization. 121digitalmarketing.com for more information. Support for KUAF also comes from PittmanCounseling.com and therapist Sean Pittman, providing private counseling services in both Fayetteville and Rogers. Sean offers over 20 years of experience in mental health care. More information is available at PittmanCounseling.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Cedarville.
Remind me where Cedarville is?
Down in the Arkansas River Valley.
Okay. Have you ever been there?
I have. It's been a while.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And did you go there for a particular reason, or was you were driving
through?
Oh, I'm
sure I did.
You know?
No, I think I did a story there years ago. I
sure.
Can't remember which one, though.
I don't blame you. I can't remember what story I did, like, last week.
Oh,
so.
You do a million. it's a beautiful part of the country. I went to a wedding at Mount Magazine this week,
mm-hmm.
and you're coming down on Highway 309,
mm-hmm.
and you look over the top of Paris as you're coming down that highway. It's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was just the perfect weekend to be both at Mount Magazine and Ozark and Clarksville in Paris last weekend.
Well, excellent. Well, this weekend will be just as busy, lots of things to do. Eureka Springs is still celebrating the May Festival of the Arts. On Saturday at 7 o'clock, Trout Fishing in America will play at the Eureka Springs Auditorium. And we have tickets to give away for that. We have a couple of pairs.
Which is huge because there is limited seating there.
Mm-hmm. We have a couple of pairs of tickets to give away. And we're going to make this easy. All you got to do is give us your name and a way to contact you. So your phone number would be awesome. At Ozark, you email.
Right.
Ozarks at large.
At gmail.com.
That's all you got to do. You just go there, email it to us, and tomorrow we, well, I won't, but you and Christina
will
announce a couple of winners. And your name will be at will call, so no tickets for you to get in the mail, nothing for you to come pick up. You just go to the auditorium at 7 o'clock on Saturday to see Trout Fishing in America.
OzarksAtLarge@gmail.com.
Easy to do. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening.
And tune in tomorrow for an all-new edition at noon. Have a happy Wednesday.